Welcome back to the podcast, Alex. Finally, we get to do a part two, but still kind of like a continuation of the part one.
Exactly. Thank you. New location, new things. Actually, I wanted to say it's been interesting. This is the first time I've done one episode of a podcast, and there was some time in between. So I have a couple like thoughts that came up about stuff I said earlier that I'm going to weave into the rest of this somehow. But we'll see in what way. But
Okay, we'll see. All right,
yeah, let's try to hammer this out before we run out of time again.
so the next question is, how do you deal with injuries and what do you work on instead?
How do I deal with injuries? That is a good question. And actually, well, I don't know. I've been planning to do like a long podcast episode myself about this because I think it's a very interesting topic and very important topic because a lot of people injure themselves and they lose out a lot of sometimes they lose out on joy of life because all of a sudden the sport they love is taken out of them and whatnot. But in short, how I deal with injuries is, first of all, I guess invest a little bit into actually figuring out what the injury is. So I see a lot of people, they just think that, a lot of the injuries we get in beach volleyball are overuse injuries. And you can sort of, not every time, but quite often you can fix them if you get onto the rehab like straight away. And you can fix them relatively quickly. But some people just like, they just, oh, I have a little bit of pain in my shoulder, and they just keep on playing for months and months until it actually gets so bad that now they actually can't play anymore. And then there's just way more, there's been more damage has been done already. And then the rehab period gets longer. So I guess that's one of my first points is to try to figure out what is wrong as quickly as possible. I have friends that are physiotherapists, and I usually go to physiotherapists and just like get down with the problem as soon as possible. Like try to cut it at the roots rather than down the line, because then I say it's like getting overweight. Like if you just get a little bit overweight, you can lose that. But if you let it go for years and years and years, then you're gonna have to you're gonna have more work to do to get back to your back to your ideal weight, I guess.
Yeah, and I really like what you said about investing in trying to figure out what the injury is, because I think a lot of times we just let it slip, and then it like maybe we don't want to spend the money to go to a doctor or a physiotherapist, and then we try to go on YouTube to figure out what it is, or Google or something. And oftentimes maybe those diagnosis online is very generalized and it's not specific to your injury, and you end up not actually curing your injury, but you're just letting time pass. And I think spending that little bit of time and money is worth it in the long run.
I think you're right. Because there are injuries that just heal by themselves in a few days or in a few weeks.
Yeah, for
Like those
sure.
injuries also exist. And then it is, in a sense, it's a waste of time and money to go to a specialist or whatever. Also, looking at YouTube videos is also a time of investment. It's a type of investment. It's time investment. I see invest, I think, is the right word. Sometimes it's money, sometimes it's time, sometimes it's both. But yeah, absolutely. It's the funny. So I've had a lot of good physios in my life that have helped me tons with my body. But there has also been my shoulder injury that I had that kept me out of the game for a long time. I went to four or five different physiotherapists. Did what they said told me to do, and it didn't help. And in the end, it was a YouTube video that I watched. And lo and behold, a few days later, I was playing again. So it's complicated stuff. I will say that in general, I think it's better to have a specialized, like someone looks at you. But also there. It's actually funny because I explained what had happened to a physio later after I had like gotten rid of the shoulder pain. And the physio that I went to, this was for another thing later. And I explained this whole shoulder thing that I had gone through and what I did to finally fix it. And he said, "That's super interesting," because he could logically see how what I did had fixed my shoulder injury. But he said, "There's no research proving that that would help shoulder injuries in general." So therefore, physiotherapists, they come from Western medicine. It has to be evidence-based quite often. Otherwise, sometimes they won't do stuff that isn't evidence-based. And sometimes the studies haven't been run yet. So it was, I stretched my lat. That's as simple as it was. And I'm not saying that this will fix everyone's shoulder problems. But no physio told me to stretch my lat, and I did it. And all of a sudden the pain was way better. And I was able to play again. So it's, yeah, I don't exactly know how, like, I want to tell everyone to get like looked up for your specific individual case, but also stay open-minded that sometimes you have to do other things to get rid of your pain.
Okay, so it's like go try to get looked up, but also do your own research kind of thing.
Kind of beautiful mix out of those two. I don't know the exact science of the balance you need, but probably
okay, that's cool. So when you injured your shoulder, what did you work on instead? Like, how did you continue being in touch with volleyball?
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I coached that summer or that year a lot, which was probably the main way for me to get stay involved with the sport. I learned a lot about coaching that summer, and that was great. But I did also, I always, it's funny because actually in the end, I realized that every time I've been injured, I have reached a major breakthrough in my game. Because if I injure my shoulder, then I work on everything that doesn't require my shoulder. And that means that out of necessity, out of just boredom, I end up exploring more about the rest of my body. And usually, like, to the point that I would never do when I'm healthy. And I've realized that over the time of my career, it has happened every single time I got injured. I've ended up exploring other parts of the game so much that I actually reached a breakthrough. And a breakthrough that I think would have been sort of difficult to reach without the injury, which is like, it's kind of a mindfuck because there's a part of me that thinks that people should get injured so that they do explore other ways to get
okay,
better.
But look, there's also two types of people. One type of people are like you who will go and explore other things, and the other type just, you know, just get sad and depressed.
That's true, yeah. I guess I have a strong wish to not be sad and depressed. So I just like go and do stuff and try to figure stuff out just to keep myself happy.
Yeah.
Basically. And so, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's for those people that get sad and depressed and stop doing everything. They should maybe reconsider that strategy.
Yeah. No, I actually agree with you because, like, even when I got injured and then I injured my ankle. So basically, I couldn't even walk or anything. But I started, you know, just sitting down and peppering against the wall and digging against the wall, finding creative ways to play against the wall. And, like, after I came back, I felt that my ball control actually improved.
Exactly. That's what usually happens because you have figured out some sort of finer details about your ball control or whatever. Like, I think hand setting is a great one to work on. In like, you can have, if you injure something in your lower body, just sit around, do hand sets, try to, you know, aim different spots, different angles from your body, whatever. Try to find the touch in your hands and explore that. And yeah, I think it completely makes sense what your experience.
Yeah.
In a sense. And that particular summer, when my shoulder was out, I think that's when I learned to pass as well as I pass today.
Ah.
I spent a lot of time thinking about passing and serve-receive that summer. And I don't know if you have seen the video about Erik Nygaard that I have on
Is
the
it
channel,
the
the Tomahawk
tomahawk?
Attack. Yeah, the Tomahawk Attack. So I ended up just playing a lot of no jump games. I also practiced my left arm a little bit. But it has given me, in my experience, a better awareness of the court on the other side. And today I have the Tomahawk Attack, which is somewhat poisonous.
Yeah.
And it's still in my game. Like I use it every now and then, just because I had a summer with a lot of reps of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's handy.
That's cool. Okay, that kind of
That's how
actually
it's.
leads to my next question. So, what has changed most about the game throughout the years? And is there anything that you would like to see in the future evolution of the game?
Ooh, like the in a bigger picture, not in my game, but in the
Yeah, in
game
the
in
bigger
general.
picture, yeah.
Yeah. So yesterday I started writing a huge blog post about this. Basically it's the same topic. No, I think how many hours do we have again? No. David Åman and Jonathan Helvig, the Swedes, jumpsetters.
Yes.
I think what they're doing is very interesting. It's super fun to watch, and it seems like Rasmus, their coach, and Anders, I don't know them super well, but I've spoken to them a little bit, or at least Rasmus. I believe they had sort of a crazy idea in their mind, like what if we taught some young players to play this way? Like, could it actually work at the highest level of the game? And they sort of just went for that, and they found some talent from Sweden, these two guys, and started teaching them this, and they've been doing it for years. And this summer they won the European Championships
Yeah.
with against several of the top teams in the world.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say it's yet proven that their game sort of works, like they're because I guess if you wanna, like, it's not enough to win against the best teams once. You have to win consistently for it to actually be a better system. But for me, I think it would be really good for the sport if I think top level B12 boys is fun to watch. But then there's some of these players that I'm calling them in my blog post, they're extraordinarily entertaining to watch. It looks different. There's more stuff happening in the air. There's more skills involved. I think it would be really great for the sport if that actually ended up being how it is played on the top level. I think it would. This goes deep, but basically, the more entertaining the sport is to watch, I think the more it's going to grow. Because then random strangers that see the sport, they go and watch a competition at, a big one somewhere, and they're like, this is actually impressive. The more impressive the sport is and looks, I think the more people are going to be like, hey, I want to try this too. It looks fun. Or I want to send my kids to a B12 ball practice.
Yeah.
That's in general what I'm seeing. Like it's interesting times. There's also these Americans, Partain, and who is he playing with? Is it Benesch?
Think
Should
so.
know this stuff better. He's also doing the jump, or they are also doing the jump setting stuff. And they seem to also, I think they haven't done too much international yet, but they've had some success also. So I don't know. It's an interesting point in the history of the game. And you know what? It could. There is a possibility that we're going through a shift right now, like that in some years, the top level players will have more of a kind of indoor-ish style, which is like it just includes more faking and trying to get the block away. Or it ends up not being as effective as the more standard way to play. Well, I guess we'll have to see.
I guess even if you consider the evolution of indoor volleyball itself, it just got more and more exciting throughout the years. So maybe this is also a breakthrough for beach volleyball.
Could be. Could be.
I think that it just takes like so much extra level of skill to reach that level on the beach.
Absolutely, because all of a sudden there's a lot of more skills you have to have in your sort of tool belt or repertoire. Maybe you have to know how to jump set. Maybe you have to know how to set quickly out to the pin. Maybe you have to know how to fake people out. Maybe you have to know how to hit a second ball. So in a sense, if we say that the game is you have to be able to serve, serve, receive, set, hit, block, and play defense. What is that? Five, six different skills. Maybe there's some added ones on top of that. Maybe you have to also be able to jump set. Maybe you have to also get better at the second ball hits or attacks. I don't know. It's does that answer the question?
It does. It does. It was nice to hear your insights about this. I mean, because you are from Sweden, right? And that's where the jump sets come from. Not okay, not
Yeah, I
come
don't think
from.
they come from there.
Not come from,
Other
but like,
players did it before, but
sorry, I take my word back on that. But like, they do it at a very entertaining level.
yeah, I would say they have taken the art a little bit further. I believe so. Then to be said though, like I'm not the best person to answer this question because my mind has been very much in just how to figure out how to learn this sport. Like I actually follow the top level volleyball maybe less than people think I should, or maybe people think I do. But I do follow. It's fun times. I mean, I've lived a long time in Sweden. I've also lived in Norway. David is from the same city as I'm from, so I saw him grow up as a kid, and like get better every year. So it's just very fun that both of the Swedes and the Norwegians are doing really well right now. It's it's just fun to because I know people that are cheering for both personally, and it's just good times, I guess, in that sense. Yeah. How do you feel if I can ask something back? Because you're in the US right now, right? I haven't been there for years. Is there, because actually in Sweden right now, you look at kids at practice, they're fucking doing jump sets because everyone's like inspired. Like it all seems like a skill that like a kid that starts playing beach volleyball in Sweden nowadays is like, I need to have this skill also. Do you see any of that over there?
I'm playing at the college level right now, so not really. Not really. I cannot speak for all the colleges or the other, like, AVP players. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. And where exactly are you?
I'm in LA, actually.
In LA, yeah. So where do you play at? Hermosa, Manhattan?
No,
Where do you
I play at my college, California State University, Northridge.
play? Okay. And you guys have your own courts. Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah, no, I don't know. I think we have exciting times ahead to see where the game's gonna go. I think no one knows the answer right now. But one thing I do know is that when I have a partner that likes to play and try to do the jump setting type of the style of playing, I think it's more fun to play the game. And I play the game because it's fun. So it's like,
It's kind of a cycle.
it's you can become worse by trying to play that way because you just make unnecessary mistakes.
Yeah.
But it's also fun to push the boundaries.
Yeah. So, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your younger self when you first started this whole thing?
Started my beach volleyball playing career or the project?
Both.
So for beach volleyball, I mean, there's a million technical details in my mind that I wish I could have told myself. I can say one general thing is that a lot of the techniques that I wanted to learn, they were not only about technical changes, they were also about changing my body so that my body would be able to perform the technique. So I spent a lot of time trying to learn these techniques without having the body, without having sort of the hardware that was able to perform it. And that just becomes a lot of, in one sense, wasted time. If that makes sense. You're trying to build something out of something that you cannot build this thing out of. So I think that would be the biggest change in how I would have coached myself compared to what I have actually done. I think I would have gotten where I am much faster if I had known that and had all the details about mobility and strength. And there's a lot of, I don't remember if we talked about this in the first part, but there's a lot of muscles in the body that if you don't have access to them, if your body doesn't use them, your body's gonna find like compensations with other muscles. And then these other muscles aren't able to do the techniques as well as if you had the full range of muscles available. So yeah, it just becomes a non-solvable issue in a sense. So that's one thing. But in general, I always try to, and now I can weave in one of the thoughts I had from last episode, because you asked who is Alex Haapamäki. Like I came at it from a beach volleyball perspective, like who am I as a player and running this project, but in the basic form of me is just another human being trying to figure out life. Like I'm just trying to stay open-minded and curious and see what this experience that we have, these years we have on this planet, what it's about, and how I can sort of make it as good for me and everyone else as possible. And for me, that means that you've got to try stuff, and you're always trying out of what you know at the time. Like you can't know the stuff you don't know. And I've always done what I thought was the best. And of course, over time, you get wiser, you get better answers. And yes, if you would have had those answers in the beginning, you would have gotten where you are quicker. But I think it's important to sort of have a no regrets kind of, like, I don't regret anything I've done. I've done stupid stuff. I've injured myself. I've done mistakes. I've looked like a fool. I've all sorts of things. I don't know if this is true, but I believe a lot of people from where I'm from, where I started playing, I think still in many people's head, I'm the idiot with a million ideas that most of them don't work. Because I've been just experimenting. I've been trying everything. Like you will, I'm the idiot that you will see at midnight in the gym, like passing a ball with his backwards somehow with some sort of body part, just trying to understand if he can learn something out of it. So I think I've just, I think a lot of people that have seen me go through these stages, probably are still skeptical to me, because I might be perceived from the outside as someone that just has gone batshit crazy. But for me, it's not really, even if I did a stupid thing some years ago, and it didn't work, and I was wrong, that doesn't mean that I've stuck with that. No, I just took whatever I could learn from that and let the rest be. Like the stuff that's wrong, they were wrong, and I don't do them anymore.
Yeah.
So, but in a sense, I don't regret any of it. It's all been part of the journey. So, so you gotta do what you gotta do. And as I said, I didn't find the type of instruction that I needed or wanted. So I had to start creating it myself. And that's the way I've done it, is just to try a bunch of things and see what works.
Yeah.
And be the madman in the laboratory.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that applies to your project as well.
It applies to my project as well. There is a lot of people that have different opinions. The most common is that I should think a little bit more short term in terms of finances, because I've run the project with a philosophy that I want to do it super, like you know, you build a house, you want to have the foundation right, so that you can build it. If you start building the rest of the house before the foundation is right, then it's going to be unsustainable.
Yeah.
And I've taken a very long-term approach to building this thing. I wanted to have things right. I put a lot of thoughts into the videos so that I want the things that I said 5 years ago to not contradict something I say in the future. And if I make a mistake, I take the mistake off. I take the video down. So I want it to be like, I want to build an evergreen project that, you know, if someone finds it in 20 years, they're going to be like, holy shit, this guy fucking put some thought into this thing. Which I believe is going to be good in the long term, even in terms of finances and stuff. But to be honest, in the short term, doing this sort of planning and being this thorough with what I do is no one's paying me for that. That comes out of my own pocket, and it takes time, which I could do other stuff with. A lot of people have said that I should be more aggressive with selling, and I should be coaching more and do more like
marketing
stuff that would make. Yeah, exactly. Marketing, selling, etc. And they might be right. Maybe I could have gone a path that was a little bit more like that. Or maybe I've done the right thing. Well, I guess the future will tell there also.
Yeah.
But I wanted to, and I still have like certain things I want to have in place that are still not in place before another part of the whole process of creating the project happens. And like a step by step, and you know, because if I do the higher level thing before the basics are done, then it's going to bite me in the back later. You might have noticed that I'm a thinker, and I've done a lot of thinking, and I've had some very cool moments in my life when I have done thinking and come up with a plan that I actually really, really, really believe in. But it's like a multifaceted plan. It's like, this has to be in place, this has to be in place, and then that's going to build into this, and that's going to build into this. And honestly, the vision is just too exciting that I can't sell myself short. I'm too curious to see if it will work. That's basically it. If I fuck up this thing, that's why. It's like, because I've like aimed so high that I might not reach it because something might happen. But I'm too curious to not try. It's like, yeah, you only live once, so you have to go for it.
No regrets, like what you said.
Exactly.
Okay, so now I'm curious about the vision. Can you share a little bit about what it looks like?
I can. I am going to make videos on my channel, podcast episodes where I share this more thoroughly. So I will give you some sort of
Sure.
semi-quick version here. But there's one part is this Volleyball project, and I'll tell you more about what the things are with that. But then there's also other projects that this Volleyball project is going to lead to. Like I have work to do for the rest of my life. To train everything out of train. The Volleyball project, I want to build a complete guide for people that want the answers that they're not finding anywhere else. I want to have in-depth, very high quality courses about all the parts of the game, the technical parts, the mental aspects, the strategical aspects, also the how to learn these things quicker. The project is called Learn Beach Volleyball Fast, and there's a reason for that, which is the methods I use to teach or learn skills. I believe they're very underutilized in the world. Like this, well, basically, there's just a bunch of thoughts on how you can pick up skills faster that I see is almost never used. So for me, it was, I don't remember if I went into this in the first part, but I realized when I started playing, I think I shared the 11-year plan. I had 11 years to before I would be too old or whatever. At that point, I realized that I have a bunch of skills I need to learn in these 11 years. So I realized if I can do anything in the beginning of this journey, where basically all the learning that I'm going to do later, all the long, long, long to-do list I have, if I can do something in the beginning that makes it quicker to go through this long to-do list, that's going to be worth the time. So, for example, I read this huge college textbook that, I think what I've learned from people that go to university, they don't read a university textbook cover to cover. They read parts of it. I spent like a month just like every single page, every single word in that book, I read everything. Because I just figured, okay, this will take 3, 4 weeks out of my life, but what if it saves me 5 years down the road? Then it's a well worth investment, you know? Anyway, that's what I want, and that's also what I want to have in the project. Like, I know not everyone is gonna be interested in it. A lot of people are just gonna be like, just tell me how to got on, like how to pass the ball. Like that's what I care about. I don't care about your philosophies. But I will also say in the courses, like, okay, now you do know the pass and the steps. Now you can go back and actually, now you realize that you have this to-do list here. You have to do step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then steps 20 steps, whatever it is. And it's going to take you 3 months or half a year if you do it normally. But if you spend, let's say, 3, 4 hours watching my course on how to learn these steps quicker, this 6 month process might become a 2 month process. So then it's very straight in their face. Like, yes, it will take a few hours to listen to my theories. But if someone can see that it's gonna, a 6 month process is gonna go down to a 2 month process, I think at that point people will be like, yeah, it's worth listening to this 4 hours. So learning philosophy also. It's interesting. I think people have and I'm the same way. We don't see the value in the philosophy, in the psychology, in the more sort of difficult to touch stuff, like we talked before, like how do you get people to understand the value of mental training or sports psychology? But once we do it, then and it completely changes our life, then we have this like holy shit moment. Like this the stuff that I thought would not help me is actually the most valuable part here.
Yeah.
Of sorts.
Yeah. I think that goes down to like always questioning, why am I doing this? What is the purpose of it? So that you understand what you're doing or why you're doing it.
Yes and no. I think that's a part of it. We can also overdo that and get into like analysis paralysis. So it's, I think it's a fine balance between looking up more information and can I optimize what I'm doing and just doing. Because at some point you also have to do and stop worrying if you have the most optimal answers. That goes back a little bit to the no regrets. This is actually something, if you want to live a life where you're growing all the time and you want to grow by learning from others, this is a constant problem, because you never know. There's never a perfect answer on when you should study more of others and when you should just do your own thing and experiment. So for me, actually, the answer I've landed to is like a percentage formula. Like, spend, I don't know, 20% of the time learning from others, and maybe 80% doing your own stuff. I mean, the balance, or if it's 50-50 or whatever the balance is, you have to see what fits your life. But then I think the pitfalls are when any of those go to zero. Like, you're only doing your own experimentation and never learning anything from anyone else. Because then you're easily getting stuck, or kind of like end up repeating the same mistakes without having someone that breaks you out of your thinking. But also, of course, if you only spend 100% of your time into beach volleyball, just goes into listening to other people's theories and never trying them out, that's also not going to make you a good player.
Yeah.
So stay away from the extremes, I guess.
Okay.
Find a balance. But if you think about it, there will always, you will never find the 100% correct answer.
Yeah.
Because there could always be someone out there having an answer on how you could optimize what you're doing.
Yeah.
And there probably always is. But
yeah.
You still got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, for sure. That's a very, very good, I've never heard of anyone say it like that before, so I'm going to keep that in mind.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So,
I mean, a little bit about that. Like, you do notice that I have a lot of thoughts that also apply to sort of life outside of volleyball, about how to learn volleyball. So one book that changed my life was The Inner Game of Tennis. And both, it taught me stuff about volleyball, but it was the first psychology book I read. And I went afterwards, I was angry for, did we talk about this?
We talked a little bit about the book, but you didn't say that you were angry.
I was angry for this stuff not being taught in school to me. I think I did talk about this before. But I realized that it opened up my mind to learning about my own brain and my own psychology from other people, rather than only from my own experiments. Because up until that point, I had basically just been doing my own experiments about how my mind works, and I had listened to some people and here and there, but I had never like took a book about like how my brain works and studied it. But I want to, if possible, and I know it's possible, I know it has happened already, I want to create this effect for people. Because a lot of people won't be searching for psychology answers, but they might be hooked at beach volleyball, and they will be searching for beach volleyball answers. But if I can give them that, if I can give them good beach volleyball answers, but at the same time guide them to these other things that work both in volleyball and in life, there's a chance that I will become the person that gives these people the same effect as The Inner Game of Tennis did to me. It's,
yeah,
I'm so grateful I read that book. It changed my life. I'm a completely different person today because of it. And that's valuable beyond any verbal information.
Yeah.
You know, the book taught me that I can actually sort of understand how my mind works and like reprogram it. Like, what the fuck is that? No one. I can change my personality. Like, that's amazing. I can deliberately design myself into a happier person that enjoys life better. I was like shocked when I figured that out. And I was like, I learned so many things in school. No one ever taught me that I can rebuild myself into a happier person. Like, how is anything important of what I learned in school compared to that? I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, when you put it like that, it's like, yeah, what the hell? Why don't we learn these things in school?
I mean, aren't we all learning stuff in school to have a better life?
Yeah.
And what is a good life? I guess it's the life that we enjoy. But if we can, and yes, of course, all the stuff we learn in school helps us enjoy life and helps us have a better life. But if we can actually access the fucking thing that creates our experience and reprogram it so that it works more efficiently, like, let's fucking do that.
Yeah.
In the long run, or I have actually already started it. I want to have a personal development project also, which is more like about life stuff, about psychology. The Beach Volleyball project also already introduces people to that kind of stuff. But then there will also be a chance later on to just go full on Alex nerd mode about psychology.
Yeah. Yeah.
If for whoever wants that, like,
for
not
sure.
everybody wants it. Some people are just going to want to care about the volleyball stuff. Some people are gonna care about more stuff. I'm absolutely not saying that I know everything about life and psychology. I wouldn't be that ignorant to claim that. But similarly to in volleyball, I have figured out some stuff that I haven't really heard in other places, even though I listen to a lot of psychologists and life coaches and all sorts of people that have a lot of smart thoughts. There's still some stuff that I've figured out that that they're not talking about. Like, I guess you said just a minute ago that you haven't heard anyone put it that way. So it's just like, if there's value in some of the thoughts I have, I just want them out in the world.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah.
And if there's not value in it, then that will show. No one will care. And but again, if that happens, at least I tried. And I can't live life and not at least put them out there so that it's possible for someone to enjoy it.
Yeah, no,
I
fully support that. You have great insights always. So that's why we're doing this podcast, basically. Speaking of all that, so what advice would you give to aspiring volleyball players or athletes listening to this?
I think my answer to that is to stay curious and look for answers. I might have some answers out there. So do others. But one thing that I think is important, which I think is not often talked about, is to be a person that's nice to be around in the beach volleyball world. Because regardless, like, you're not going to get good at this sport by yourself. Like, you will need a partner, you will need to play against people, you will probably need someone to coach you. So if you're a person that's just not nice to play with, not nice to play against, not nice to coach, that's going to keep you back from reaching your goals, I believe. Yeah. Because, yeah, it's just people do this sport for fun. People like to be... People, I believe, don't like to be around negative, bitchy people when they want to have fun. Put it as simple as that. So,
yeah.
So I think there's a quality of. I mean, I know someone that I like that I meet randomly, I'll help them. Like, I won't coach them. I won't give them a 2-hour one-on-one for free. But like, if they have some questions and I like them, I'll answer them and try to help them. But then there's people that are not nice to be around. I'm not sharing anything to them. And I don't think I'm the only one in the world that either consciously or subconsciously does this.
Yeah.
Like, we all have pieces of information and wisdom of the sport that, you know, we can get a lot of value from sharing this and having these types of conversations. That's why I love podcasts and I support this whole project of yours. So also, I think this can be very valuable when we just have, like, I mean, you're a person, you want to get good at the sport. I'm a person, I want to get good at the sport. We just sit down and share ideas. Yeah, if you were an asshole, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't do this episode with you.
Yeah, you basically.
But unfortunately, I do see people that have sort of a negative attitude when they're on the court, when they're around other players, when they're, and I don't think it's helping them. I just don't think it is.
Okay, but the question is, are they even aware about this? You know how it's like when that one person is being an asshole and everyone else gossips about them, but no one actually tells them to their face and they just keep acting that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a very good question. Probably sometimes they are not aware of it. Sometimes they maybe are. Did we talk about like trying to swallow your ego in the first part?
I do not remember that.
Like, one thing that I think is valuable is good friends that, you know, you've known for a long time and that dare to give you this, to ask them for honest feedback. Like, hey, you know, if we were childhood friends or we played volleyball long together, so we actually trust and know each other, like, what is it that I do that drives people crazy? What is it that people talk shit about me when I'm not there? And also framing the conversation in a way that you're not going to just take this information and then attack back, but you're going to take this information and work on it. Because you genuinely want to become a better player, so it's good for you to know your weaknesses. I think that kind of self-awareness in volleyball and in life again it's good. It does take some, it is an investment, it's an emotional investment, it takes energy and time and resources to do this, because it's mentally heavy to hear the shit that you're doing wrong and not like just backlash and get angry at it. It's actual like mental labor to do that, to listen to this stuff. But it's also some of the best stuff that you can do to yourself, I think, to uncover the things. There's one of the programs that I've learned a lot from talks about different types of knowledge. There's known knowns, the stuff that you know that you know. Then there's known unknowns, the stuff that you don't know that you don't know. Like, you might know that you don't know how to pass. But then there's the unknown unknowns. The stuff that you don't even know that you don't know. And that's the shit that's going to fuck you up. it's the stuff that you're not aware of. It's the skills that you very badly need, but you don't even know that you need them, or you don't even know that you don't have them. And that's the stuff that's going to keep you absolutely stuck in life if you don't figure out a way to get a hold of those pieces of information. And two strategies to do that is to learn from other people, is to read, for example, personal development books, because they will give you different viewpoints of what people do and how people process things. And then you'll go, you know, you might read a book that has 10 ideas and you already knew 9 of those 10. And there's, in a sense, waste of time to read those 9. But then there might be one idea in this book and you're like, I've never heard about that before. I wonder if I do it. And then you start looking at it and you realize that you're doing it. And it could sometimes be the thing that's holding you back from reaching your goals or being the person you want to be, or doing what you want to do. So that's one strategy. And then the honest feedback part is another. In my experience, sometimes you can do this with strangers. I think it's a little bit easier with people that you have some history with, that you know. One example, my favorite tool for becoming a better coach is to, after a coaching session, try to tell the players that I want to know anything that you thought was bad with this coaching session. Anything that, you know, didn't make sense, irritated you, made you angry, made you bored, whatever it is. And I also usually tell that having these conversations is my best tool for becoming a better coach in the future. And I want to become better in the future for you and everyone else that I will coach in the future. So try to really get them to understand that I will not backlash at them. I ask them to say the stuff that they wouldn't dare to tell me otherwise.
Yeah.
And sometimes I get people to open up. And honestly, that's my number one tool to become a better coach, is to listen to what they say and learn from it. I don't always agree with what they say, but sometimes they have a point. Sometimes I realize that there's different nuances, different aspects, different ways to do it. And even if I, in one sense, don't agree, I agree with them in another sense. And then I can become more nuanced in the future about how I do things. So that and a bunch of technical stuff, but let's not go into that.
That's for another episode.
Exactly. That's for the rest of the Learn Beach Wall Pass project.
Yeah, that's your project.
My project is literally full of stuff that I wish I had known earlier. And that's the only stuff I share. So
two more questions. But first, Alex, I want to acknowledge you for, first of all, thank you for doing this podcast. I mean, we've been trying to find times to do it. And even though we're doing it in two parts, but you know, your insights are so valuable that I'm sure people will really enjoy it, especially people who follow your work. And I want to introduce your your work to other people who don't know yet about your work. And I'm sure it will really, really help them in their beach volleyball progress. Not even beach volleyball, like life. Like you have so many wonderful, brilliant thoughts that I've never heard before. So yeah, thank you really, really for putting your work out there into the world. So what is the biggest lesson that volleyball has taught you?
You did send me these questions before, and I did think that some of this I should think a little bit about before we jump on the call. Because
answer from your heart.
Now I need to figure something out here, how to answer this. What is the biggest lesson that volleyball has taught me? I do have an answer. I don't know if it's the biggest one, but it's a big one. Sports is like life, but in a miniature version. So, for example, this project that I'm creating has a bunch of different parts that I have to first do. Maybe I have to do one thing for a couple of years, another thing for a couple of years, then a third thing for a couple of years. So that will take 6 years in total. Then I have to combine these three parts into a fourth part that wouldn't be possible if I hadn't done the previous work. That will take another couple of years, and then I have to refine that for a couple of years. That's a 10-year process. That's a scary fucking road to embark on, because you don't have guarantees that it will work out. And it's a big chunk of your life. It's basically a huge gamble. Probably too big of a gamble but what you can do in sports is you can do a miniature versions of this. So you can, for example, let's say you're stuck with passing. You don't pass as well as you wish you would. You could have a strategy that, okay, this is just an example from my head. You could use 1 week to look at all the passing videos on YouTube. Then you could have another week to experiment some of them. Third week, to find a partner to practice the drills that you found out in week two that you think there's value in them.
Mm-hmm.
And week four, you practice them with your partner. So you have now 4 weeks of sort of a process that also is going to take probably 4 weeks before you might get any results from it. So it's also a gamble of sorts, but it's a way smaller gamble than the bigger version that takes 10 years. And if you go through a few of these types of, you know, part one plus part two plus part three plus part four, combine those into part five, refine that into part six, or something in that sense, and you realize that this is a strategy that seems to work, and it creates breakthroughs in your life or your game that no other method does. After you go through a few of these cycles, you sort of start to trust that this is possible. It is possible to hold off instant gratification and follow a long-term plan for a later bigger gratification. And it's also possible to enjoy this process. It's possible to have fun on the way. I would never have dared to start this project the way I have started it, with the type of long-term thinking that I've had, if I hadn't experienced long-term thinking work in a smaller scale earlier in my life several times.
Which is through sports.
Yes, exactly. I've had, again, I've been the guy with all the ridiculous ideas. I've had ideas how to reach out to people, how to get someone to practice something with me. You know, tried, failed, figured out a way to get what I wanted to make it work. One thing that I did was, a great friend of mine, he's from the States, so we don't meet too often, and now the pandemic has definitely been in the way, so I haven't seen him in a few years. But we managed to get 2 months out of our lives together, where we lived in the same place. So I knew that me and him, we practice well together. We can communicate our needs and wishes and wants, and we have very similar brains in how we think and how we want to explore the sport. We were able to block out a 2 month period where we basically just lived in the same place and lived and breathed and ate volleyball 24/7. I believe that I learned more volleyball in those 2 months than I had done in the 2 years prior to that.
Wow.
But it did take some planning to set up my life so that I have the time. You know, I had to make arrangements and stuff so that it would work. Let's say I put a month of work to just make it happen. So I practiced with him for 2 months and I made 1 month of work before to make it happen. So my investment is 3 months. But if that gives me results that would otherwise take me 24 months to get, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Right? So it's these kinds of solutions. I think I've gotten a bigger trust you know, if my life goes to hell, then this will be my biggest fail also. It will be the thing that drives me to the ground. Or it's going to work out. We'll see. That's I'm still during the process. It's not done yet. I haven't reaped the
rewards.
Yeah, like when you plant the seeds and then you let
you
them
reap
grow.
What
and
you
then
sow?
Exactly. I have reaped some of stuff that I have sown, but far from everything. And on this particular experiment, the project experiment, because it's a long-term one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a significant part of my life. There's no guarantees in life, so we'll see. But yeah. I have the important part is that I have been enjoying it so far. It's some of the most meaningful stuff I've decided to do in my life. I've learned so many things that I wouldn't have otherwise probably. So it's worth it. I've already reaped enough benefits from it. But hopefully there's more.
Yeah, for sure. So how can our listeners support you along your journey?
You can support me. I mean, the most basic important thing is, I guess, to engage, which means if any of the stuff, if I seem like someone that has something to teach you, something of value to give you, well, follow the project. You can follow there's a few different things you can subscribe to. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel and the podcast and the email list. And sharing the word, like if this podcast episode was valuable, share it to a friend. That's the stuff that really makes the difference, because you know, if you would ever have one piece of content that people shared to more people,
mm-hmm.
Like it could go viral.
Yeah,
in a sense, like if to more people than like one person listens but shares it to two, those people share it to two.
Yeah,
that would be the dream. Of course, just have to create a piece of content that's good, that it's gonna happen. But sharing the word is really changes things. And of course, further down the road, if there's anything of the stuff that I will sell, either now, either coaching or courses in the future, like, of course, that helps. But when the momentum gets big enough, I think that will take care of itself.
Mm.
It's I will tell you, it's interesting. I just came to Phuket 3 days ago. This was my third day. And every single day, at least one person has said that they recognize me from YouTube.
Wow. You see? So your reach is already growing.
So it is happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And usually people have positive things to say. It happened first time, I think in 2019, 3 years ago, and it was a mindfuck moment when it happened. But it has happened more and more years after
that. That's amazing.
And this has been the most intense. I've never gotten to a place where literally every single day it happens.
Oh wow!
I mean, it's only 3 out of 3 days, so I don't have. I haven't been a year here yet and gotten every day, but it's cool. It's so I guess. So at least some people care.
Yeah, no, of course. This is you reaping what you have sowed.
Exactly. But yeah, the project is learnbeachvolleyballfast.com. It's the same on YouTube. The podcast is called the Learn Beach Volleyball Fast podcast. It should be in all podcast apps. And I do have an Instagram also, although that's a little bit more of a, it's not my main channel. I sort of just put up stuff when I feel like there. But it also exists.
Yeah, for sure. I will link all those below so people can check it out.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course,
so
of
much.
Course. So, Alex, we have reached the end of
is
our
this coming
podcast.
To an end?
It is. It is, actually. So, once again, thank you so much for your time, for doing this
podcast.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
So, you know, is there anything else that you would like to add that I might have missed out? You know, it was a really long podcast, but maybe I might have missed something.
Wait. So it's been super fun to talk, and I could literally talk for 15, 20, 50, 100 hours more. So there's always more stuff to say, but no, thank you so much for this. This has been a lot of fun. I did have two notes of what I said in the first episode that I wanted to add on to. One was, who is Alex? I went through that already.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one was, we talked about, I compared car salesmen with volleyball coaches. Like, a, you know, a car salesman wouldn't sell a car without knowing the needs of
yes.
the customer. And I thought a little bit more about that. And that, so my approach to that, for that to be true actually requires the coach to believe that there's several different paths you can take to move forward. Of course, if you only believe that there's only one way, like it's, you know, the there's different types of coaching in the world. Like there's the Brazilian way, a lot of reps. Mm. There's the some people say it's the American way to play a lot of games. And some people say it's the European way to have a lot of technical analysis and whatnot. I personally want to be a coach that can handle all of these different ways to move forward. And then that means that I want to know sort of what the players' wishes are, where they want to get, what type of learning they enjoy, and then sort of design the learning with them. But yeah, I remember I went quite hard at people that don't do that, and I think if it's true what I say, which is that I believe that there's several different ways to go forward. If one needs to get better at attacking, for example, you could start breaking attacking technique down and become technically better. But you could also work with vision and seeing the court better. You could work with decisions. And all these paths are different. They look different in practice. And for me, it's about being smart about which one you choose and when, depending on the goals of the player.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I meant with... do you buy a sports car? Do you buy a family car or whatever you want to buy? Like, discuss with the customer before you sell them something.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
I think.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. All right. And that's a wrap. If you made it to part two, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode with the Volley Talk podcast. I hope that you found this episode super fun and got to pick Alex's brain and his insights about the game we all love. Again, thank you sincerely for listening, and feel free to share this episode on your Instagram or with your friends and teammates and tag me at the Volley Talk podcast so we can keep growing this awesome beach volleyball community. And if you haven't already, hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you get your podcast to automatically receive the newest episode when it's released. Thank you, and I'll see you in the next episode.